I'm the Gypsy, and you're not, and this is the Rubber Biscuit Road Show, presented by Artist Alley Studio, featuring the artisan, handcrafted, and branded creations of the Gypsy and Mad Hatter at www.artistalleystudio.com. And now, on with the show. Welcome to episode 15 of the Rubber Biscuit Road Show. I am your host, the Gypsy. Well, in last week's episode, we found out that Ernie, Jimmy's stepdad, was coming to the rescue to get them out of Topeka before the hateful Miss Evans took over the children and took over Shirley's life. In this week's episode, we're going to find out what happens and how Ernie's able to get them out of Topeka before the evil Miss Evans gets her claws into the children and into Shirley. And I've got a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. Jimmy woke up to the smell of coffee and biscuits and gravy. Not just any gravy, sausage gravy. Dad made breakfast. Dad made breakfast? Jimmy jumped out of bed. He loved his dad's cooking, and it had been years since he had tasted Ernie's biscuits and gravy. The biscuits were always golden brown and flaky, the gravy smooth and savory, with the spicy sausage chunks just the right size and uniform all the way through. Jimmy would be willing to bet that there was exactly the same amount of sausage chunks in each and every delicious ladle of Ernie's ambrosia gravy. Ernie was standing at the stove when Jimmy came into the kitchen. Here you go, sleepyhead. Ernie handed Jimmy a plate he had just prepared. Ernie had not only prepared biscuits and gravy, but also perfect sunny-side-up eggs. Jimmy felt like he had just died and gone to heaven. Shoveling a spoonful of food into his mouth, Jimmy said, "Where's Mom and Patty?" Ernie gave Jimmy a look that he knew all too well. Jimmy swallowed and said, "Sorry, Dad." Ernie shook his head. "Talking with your mouth full. Thought you were raised better than that." Jimmy flushed and Ernie laughed. Ernie reached for the coffee pot. "Do you drink coffee?" He filled a cup and handed it towards Jimmy. "I've drank it before." Jimmy took the offered cup and set his plate on the counter. Reaching in the cabinet, Jimmy poured powdered creamer and sugar into the hot, dark brown liquid. Ernie wrinkled his nose. "That's not coffee, that's cereal." Ernie shuddered. He was a coffee purist and drank it strong, hot, and black. "Your mom and sister already ate and are on their way to IGA to see if they have any boxes so you can start packing up the house." Ernie walked over by his son and looked out the kitchen window. He had an air of seriousness about him and appeared to be deep in thought. "Your mom and I need to run some errands. I'm counting on you to get the packing done. Keep some clothes out for you and your sister, but pack everything else. Keep the doors locked while we are gone, and do not answer the phone for any reason." Jimmy looked at his dad and said, "You're worried about Miss Evans." Ernie turned and looked at Jimmy. "Yes," was all he said. Ernie and Shirley took off in the old sky blue Rambler and left the children to start packing up the house. Jimmy had just carried the last packed box to the living room when he heard a car pull into the driveway. He knew the sound of the Rambler, and this was not it. He looked over at Patty. "Go to the bedroom and be quiet." Patty, for once in her life, did not argue with her brother and ran to the bedroom. Despite the warm day, the blinds were pulled down over the windows. Ernie had done this before he and Shirley had left to save from prying eyes. Jimmy pulled back the edge of the blind and could just make out the metallic grill of a Buick. There was the sound of two car doors opening and closing. Jimmy ran to his bedroom and closed his door. He sat quietly on the edge of his bed, barely breathing, his heart beating hard in his chest. He made up his mind that if this was Miss Evans, she would not take him or his sister without a fight. Jimmy heard the front door open. Jimmy's heart jumped into his throat. "I know I locked the front door. I know I did. At least, I think I did." Jimmy felt sick to his stomach as he heard footsteps cross the floor towards his room. Doubling his fist, he was ready to spring and fight. The doorknob to his room turned, and as the door swung open, Jimmy jumped up from the bed and about tripped over himself as he tried to stop his headlong charge into his mom and dad. Whoa, champ, Earl explained. He caught Jimmy and kept him from crashing to the floor. I promise I won't take you to juvie. Ernie and Shirley started laughing. Jimmy was confused. But the car? Ernie smiled. We got rid of the Rambler. If they put out an APB on your mom's car before we can get out of the state, we may not make it. So we sold her car to a used dealer, and then I used the money to buy a Buick station wagon. Ernie looked at Shirley, obviously pleased with his plan. Jimmy furrowed his brow. But, Dad, if they figure out that you have come to get us, couldn't they figure out that you now have a station wagon in your name with Kansas license plates? Ernie's grin grew bigger. Well, that might be true if it was registered in my name, but it isn't. Jimmy was puzzled. If it isn't in your name or Mom's name, then whose name is in it? Ernie put his hand on Jimmy's shoulder. Yours. Dad, that doesn't make sense. They know my name. They could still find us. Jimmy was thinking that his mom and dad had lost their minds. Jimmy, what is your name? Your full name? Jimmy scratched his head. James Allen George Stewart. Because of a speech impediment when he was younger, Jimmy had had a hard time explaining to people why his last name was George and his mother and sister's name was Stewart. Shirley went to court and had Stewart added to Jimmy's name, keeping the George name also. Now, son, when the Evans whore dropped you into the juvie detention center, what did you tell them your name was? Jimmy shrugged his shoulders. James Stewart. Ernie slapped him on the back. Exactly. They will be looking for Shirley, Patricia, and James Stewart, not Jim George. That son is who the car is registered to. Jim George. Jimmy laughed. You're sneaky, Dad. The family spent the rest of the day making sure they had everything packed. That evening, Ernie grilled some chicken on the charcoal grill in the backyard. While the family sat around the table enjoying a meal of corn on the cob, grilled chicken, and baked potatoes, they talked about what the future might hold for them in St. Joe. All went to bed early that night because tomorrow would be a long day of loading the boxes and furniture into a U-Haul truck. After breakfast of bacon, eggs, and toast, Shirley and Ernie left to pick up the U-Haul. Jimmy walked around the property. He had liked this house. After Mom and Grandma had had their falling out and Grandma threw Mom out of her house, they had lived in one dive after another. The cockroach infested 312 West 3rd, the slug infested 433 East High, and 1235 Bellevue with its stagnant water smell wafting up from the crawl space under the house. A little over a year ago, they had landed here at 5541 Southwest 29th Street. With Shunganunga Creek running along the east side of the property, Jimmy could go fishing any time he wanted. There were woods behind the south side of the property, and to the west was a horse farm where people stabled and trained their horses. Jimmy liked watching the people put their animals through their paces. For a teenage boy of 15, it was the perfect home, and Jimmy knew he was going to miss it. Jimmy walked around to the front of the house and saw his ex-girlfriend, Jeannie Bear, walking up the road towards the horse farm where she had kept her horse stabled. She had broken up with him shortly before the motel incident, and Jimmy did not understand why. She had never told him the reason, and each inquiry by Jimmy had been met with silence. Jimmy called to her. Jeannie! She kept walking. Jeannie! She did not turn around. Jeannie! Jimmy said as he walked to the end of the drive. We are moving, and I will never see you again. Jeannie did not break stride and kept walking up the road. Jimmy felt a sinking feeling in his stomach. Goodbye, he said, too soft for her to hear. Jimmy had known Jeannie since they had both had attended kindergarten at Clay Elementary School. They had lost contact with each other when Jimmy had transferred to Sumner Elementary School in fourth grade. When Jimmy started at Marjorie French Junior High, he discovered that Jeannie was a student there also, and they had gone steady until she broke up with him. He did not know why then, and he did not know why now, and as he watched her retreating form head up 29th Street, he knew that he would never know. The rest of the afternoon was spent loading the U-Haul. The first thing that had gone into the truck was Shirley's upright baby grand piano. Jimmy hated moving the heavy piano, and Ernie wasn't liking it very much either. But Jimmy knew that his mother would never get rid of it because of the brand on the back of the piano case. Delivered to Long Branch, Front Street, Dodge City, Kansas. Shirley loved to show the brand off to every new person she met. Ernie suggested to Shirley that the piano would be a fine home for catfish at the bottom of the creek. Shirley suggested a place where she would put her foot if he didn't get the piano loaded on the truck. Once the truck was loaded, Ernie crawled into his pickup and released the drive shaft. He had taken Jimmy under the truck with him and explained what and why he was doing it. Jimmy handed Ernie the tools he asked for and experienced his first time of getting his hands dirty working on a vehicle. They got the pickup truck hooked up to the hitch on the U-Haul and went into the house. just as the sun was setting. The family had a cold dinner of ham sandwiches and potato salad and went to sleep in the new sleeping bag Shirley had just got a couple of weeks before with her income tax return. Shirley woke Jimmy and Patty up. "Come on, guys. Get up. It's time to go." Shirley was restless and very anxious to get on the road. Jimmy rolled over and yawned. "What time is it, Mom?" Shirley looked at her watch. "It's 5:15. Time to go." Jimmy yawned again and rolled back into his sleeping bag. "Wake me at 7, Mom, okay?" The next thing Jimmy knew, the sleeping bag was lifted a couple of feet off the floor and then dropped. As Jimmy hit the floor, he let out an audible oof sound. "Your mom said get up." Jimmy scrambled to his feet out of his sleeping bag. "Yes, sir." Jimmy helped roll up the sleeping bags and then ran into the bathroom to use the john and brush his teeth. When he came out, the house was empty. Jimmy stepped out on the front porch and saw his mom and dad loading the animals into the station wagon. The two cats, Blue Boy and Sam, had been loaded first, both in their own pet carrier cardboard boxes. Then the black Labrador Retriever, Nuisance, and the black standard poodle, Jacqueline. The last dog to be loaded was Jimmy's favorite, Buster. Buster was 1 year older than Jimmy and had been his dog since Jimmy was a baby. Buster was a registered dachshund, but was a throwback. Instead of weighing in at just a few pounds, Buster weighed in at a whopping 65 pounds. Jimmy came out and helped lift Buster into the back of the station wagon. Buster licked Jimmy's face in greeting. Jimmy loved Buster, and Buster loved Jimmy. Shirley walked through the house one last time to make sure nothing was missed. She turned off the lights and locked the door, dropping the house key under a brick on the front porch. They pulled out of the driveway one last time, Ernie driving the U-Haul and Shirley driving the station wagon. Jimmy rode with his mother, and Patty rode with her dad. The mini-caravan headed north on Fairlawn Road in the pre-dawn hours of June 2, 1972, and the 9 a.m. deadline was fast approaching. At 10th Street, they turned back east and entered Gage Park at the Memorial Entrance. Ernie had to go and get gas for the U-Haul truck, so he dropped off Patty with Jimmy and Shirley and headed off to fill up the U-Haul. While they waited for Ernie, Shirley fed Jimmy and Patty cinnamon rolls and orange juice. Within 15 minutes, Ernie was back, and they headed north on Gage Boulevard to join up with Interstate 70. Heading east on 70, they merged onto 75 North. After crossing the Kansas River, they merged onto U.S. 24 East. As they passed the Cloverleaf Drive-In at Highway 24 and Rochester Road, Jimmy felt an overwhelming sadness coming over him. He had spent some of the best years of his childhood at the outdoor theater. He knew somewhere deep down inside that he would never see another movie there again. That thought also crossed his mind as they passed Ira Price's Cafe. Jimmy did not know how he knew. He just knew that the hot roast beef sandwiches he loved so much from the cafe, he would never taste again. They turned off U.S. 24 onto K4 East. As they passed Reese's Fruit Farm, Jimmy's mouth started watering for a cider slush. "Mom, can we stop and get a slush?" Shirley shook her head. "We have to get out of here. Besides, it's too early. They are not open yet." Jimmy was disappointed. He understood, but that did nothing to appease his thirst for the icy cold tree. The miles rolled by as they followed the U-Haul across the Kansas farm country towards Atchison, Kansas and the Missouri border. Neither Shirley nor Jimmy spoke, each lost in their own thoughts. Shirley checked her mirrors often, fearful that the dreadful Miss Evans might have found out what they were doing and send the cops after them. Shirley had nothing to worry about. It wasn't even 9 a.m. yet, the time Miss Evans had told Shirley to surrender herself and her children. God willing, they would be in Missouri before the Evans horde knew they were missing. At Nortonville, Kansas, K4 ended and merged with U.S. 59 North. At 9 a.m., the zero hour, they crossed the Missouri River steel-girded bridge, leaving Atchison and the Sunflower State and entering the Show-Me State. Ernie pulled into the gravel lot of a liquor store that was right by the bridge. Entering the store, he yelled over to Shirley that he would be right back. He emerged a few minutes later with Cokes for Shirley, Jimmy, and Patty, and a bottle of vodka for himself. Patty and Jimmy traded places, and as Ernie pulled back onto U.S. 59, he opened the vodka bottle and took a long pull from it, the way a thirsty man will pull from a bottle of water. Ernie knew Jimmy was deep in thought and did not try to intrude on his reverie. Jimmy watched the trees zoom by in the bluff woods that lined the highway. As they entered St. Joseph, the first thing that struck Jimmy was how ragged it looked. It appeared to be a town just as old as Topeka, but in a state of apparent disrepair. The streets were cracked and bumpy, buildings had peeling paint, and all the windows looked dirty. Litter accumulated in the gutters and weeds lined the streets. And what was that smell? Ernie inhaled a big lungful of air. "Can you smell that? That's the stockyards. You'll get used to it." It suddenly occurred to Jimmy that everything Topeka, Kansas was, St. Joseph, Missouri was not. He knew at that moment that it would be long, long time before he would ever call Topeka home again. He knew that St. Joseph would never be home to him. Jimmy felt melancholy, and Jimmy, for the first time in his life, and definitely not the last time, thought to himself, there is no place like home. Jimmy wandered the streets of St. Joseph's, trying to get a feel for the town. Ernie had set the family up at 1008 South 11th, a duplex in one of the oldest parts of the city. Two blocks away from the Pony Express stables sat occupying a space in history. Three blocks away, the Patey House that had traveled through time as a hotel, an epileptic sanatorium, and now a museum sat majestic and stark on one of the many hills that made up the town. On a hill even taller and only one block away from the Stewart residence sat the lot where the home of the infamous outlaw Jesse James once lived and met his end. The house had been moved across town and now sat in the parking lot of a motel as a tourist attraction. A sign outside the house tempted you to see the bullet hole. As Jimmy wandered the streets, he found nothing to change his original impression of this decaying industrial rail town. He was thankful for the days when Ernie would take him junking because it got him out of St. Joseph for a while. Wathena and Elwood, Kansas had the best dumps, and Ernie and Jimmy would, in a day's work, collect plenty of copper and brass to sell at one of the local scrapyards. Ernie always carried a .22 caliber rifle with him, and he would take turns with Jimmy picking off the large, hairy rats that scavenged through the maggot-infested, rotting piles of garbage. Shirley got a job as a seamstress at Big Smith Coverall Company. When Ernie's mother, Mary Lou, came to town, Shirley got her a job at Big Smith, working the machine next to her. The two women did not get along together, and it was not long before Mary Lou was gone from Big Smith and St. Joseph. The fighting between the two women caused Ernie to fall off the wagon, which led to an epic fight between Shirley and Ernie. Ernie disappeared for 2 weeks, and when he returned, Shirley told him, "You disappeared when your daughter was born. You disappeared when me and your mother had a disagreement. If you disappear ever again, do not come back. Three strikes and you're out." Early one morning, Ernie woke Jimmy up. "Let's go fishing, son," was all he said, and was all the coaxing Jimmy needed. Ernie and Jimmy headed north on US 169 out of St. Joseph towards Rochester Falls. Jimmy liked the name of the falls, Rochester. It reminded him of the cemetery where his ancestors were buried in Topeka. As they started across the Platte River Bridge, Ernie suddenly exclaimed, "Shit, brate!" Ernie stopped the truck in the middle of the bridge and jumped out. A recently flattened raccoon, its guts hanging out of its ripened open stomach, lay festering on the sun. Ernie grabbed the dead raccoon by the tail and flung it in the back of his pickup truck. As they continued across the bridge, Ernie said, "Best fish bait ever!" The dirt road leading under the bridge was rutted and bumpy, yet with the skill that comes from years of driving to obscure fishing spots, Ernie maneuvered the truck down the embankment. When they stopped, Ernie instructed Jimmy to get the fishing gear out of the back of the truck. Reaching into the bed, Ernie retrieved the raccoon carcass and flung it up under the bridge. Taking his pocket knife out, Ernie walked over to the raccoon and with surgical precision excised the liver. Ernie cut off a piece of the liver and handed it to Jimmy to bait his hook. Ernie cut an identical piece of the liver and baited his hook. Father and son sat on the bank of the Platte River waiting for the fish to bite. They had started fishing at 7 o'clock. They had a couple of channel cat on the stringer as well as a wide-mouth bass. It was now 9 o'clock and Ernie was just getting ready to tell Jimmy that it was time to go when the game warden came walking down the embankment. Ernie did not hate many things in the world, but the few things he hated, game wardens topped the list. "How are you boys doing?" the game warden drawled. "Fine," Ernie said. "Boy, pull out your fishing license." Jimmy reached for his wallet as Ernie produced his from his back pocket. Ernie and Jimmy handed the game warden their fishing license. The warden looked at both licenses and then looked towards Ernie's pickup truck. "That rifle in the back window loaded?" Ernie shook his head. "Nope. Bolt's in the glove box. You can look if you want." The warden looked in the window of the truck and could see that there was no bolt in the rifle. "What do you use that rifle for?" Jimmy spoke up. "We shoot rats at the dump." The warden eyed the boy and asked, "What have you caught today?" Jimmy retrieved the stringer from the river and held it up. The warden walked over, looked at the fish, and said, "Nice catch." Handing the fishing license back to father and son, he said, "You gentlemen have a nice day." Ernie was pleased the bastard had not been able to find anything to miss. Ernie's moment of satisfaction was soon to dissipate. As the game warden headed back to the embankment, he eyed the raccoon carcass under the bridge. "What's this?" Ernie walked over to the warden. "We found it flattened on the bridge," Ernie smiled. "Some of the best fish bait there is." The game warden picked up the stick and poked at the flattened roadkill. "This animal's been shot." Ernie's jaw dropped. "Are you out of your fucking mind? Bakun is flatter than a pancake. Jimmy walked over. Dad picked it up off the bridge, and there's a big greasy spot up there where it was laying. The game warden hooked his thumbs in his belt. I just came across that bridge, and I saw no greasy spot. I say that coon's been shot. Let me see your hunting license. Ernie reached down and picked up the dead raccoon whose guts spilled out on the ground. Do you need fucking glasses, moron? This coon has run over. The game warden shook his head. I see it differently. Throw the coon in the back of your truck and follow me into Savannah, and we'll let the judge decide if you shot it or not. Ernie threw the raccoon in the back of the pickup. Stay here, boy. I'll be back. Jimmy knew Ernie was angry. When he was angry, he always referred to Jimmy as boy, and he had done it twice. Jimmy was just glad that he was not on the receiving end of that anger. Jimmy looked at his watch. 3 o'clock. Where's Dad? Ernie had been gone 6 hours, and Jimmy was thirsty, hungry, and worried. Jimmy was no coward, but he did not relish the thought of being abandoned on the banks of the Platte River overnight, especially when he didn't have any way to start a fire. Jimmy walked along the bank of the river, watching the schools of minnows start in and out of the edge of the water. Here and there, Jimmy had noticed the human-like paw print of a raccoon in the mud along the bank. He wondered if it was the last mark on earth at the carcass that his dad was falsely accused of shooting. Jimmy was deep within thought when the sound of the tires crunching on gravel grabbed his attention. Looking up the embankment, he saw the nose of his dad's pickup truck. Ernie seemed to appear out of nowhere and yelled down towards the river. Cut the fish on the stringer loose and get the gear up here! Jimmy yelled back. Cut them loose a couple hours ago, Dad, so they wouldn't die. Ernie motioned for Jimmy to hurry. Good. Now go grab the gear, boy, and let's go. Crap. Dad is still angry. That son of a bitch left me sitting outside the fucking courtroom all day, waiting on the judge, while he took off to whom the hell knows where. A little while ago, he shows back and tells me I can come back and get you. What a generous motherfucker he is. Anyway, we have to get back to Savannah and wait for the fuck who knows how much longer to see the judge about that fucking raccoon. Ernie was no stranger to four-letter words, but Jimmy had never heard his dad use as many as one time as he did now. Ernie was way beyond angry, and Jimmy decided the best thing to do at this point was just to remain silent. Ernie ranted and raved nonstop all the way back to the courthouse in the town square of Savannah, Missouri. The courthouse was a remnant of the 1800s, built from limestone and brick, which was abundant in the area. The large Gothic structure dominated the downtown area of the small county seat. Ernie paced in front of the stately building, muttering and smoking nonstop, while Jimmy sat quietly on one of the stone benches that lined the sidewalk leading to the courthouse steps. Around 4:30, the game warden came out of the courthouse. Well, Mr. Stewart, the judge had a full docket today and won't be able to see you until tomorrow. The smug look on the game warden's face caused every ounce of blood Ernie had in his body to rocket to his head. I'm not coming back to your pissant town and waste another day playing your fucking game. If smugness has a life of its own, then the game warden's smugness was thriving and growing in leaps and bounds. Oh, you won't have to return tomorrow, Mr. Stewart, because you'll be spending the night in our jail. Ernie had tried to keep his temper in check, but enough was enough. Jimmy saw his dad clench and unclench his fist. Ernie was a barroom brawler, and Jimmy had seen his dad break the jaw with his Popeye-like forearms on many a man who was fool enough to challenge him. And what the fuck about my son? He exploded. Jimmy saw the smugness die on the game warden's face as he took a step back from Ernie. Well, Mr. Stewart, the game warden said, trying to gain his composure and regain control of the situation, you can pay the $75 fine and be on your way. The following silence hung heavy in the hot August air. Finally, Ernie broke the silence and said through gritted teeth, I knew there was a racket here. I knew you were a crooked son of a bitch. Do you even fucking care that I have to work for a fucking week to make $75? The game warden did not respond. He held out his hand. Ernie stared at the outstretched hand for just a moment, then reaching into his pocket, pulled out a roll of bills. As Ernie separated each bill from the roll, he spit on it before driving it into the game warden's hand. The game warden acted as if he wasn't fazed by Ernie's statement of displeasure. As the last bill hit the game warden's hand, he said, Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Enjoy the rest of your day with your son. Ernie balled his fist and, turning on his heel, walked away. As the game warden laughed, Jimmy walked up to him, looking him in the eye. The game warden stopped laughing. What are you looking at, punk? Jimmy held his gaze for a moment, and then, turning to follow his dad, he said, Oh, nothing. I just never saw a walking piece of shit before. Ernie entered the bar and grill across the street from the courthouse. Ordering a beer for himself and a Coke and a burger for Jimmy, Ernie had downed 2 beers before Jimmy's hamburger arrived. I saw you over at the game warden, the bartender said. How much did he steal from you? Ernie took a pull from his mug of beer. $75. The bartender wiped his hands on a bar towel. Yep, that's about normal for those two. Ernie looked at him. Two? The bartender chuckled. Yep, him and the judge. Those two are the biggest crooks in Northwest Missouri. Ernie downed his third beer and told Jimmy, finish that burger. Time to go. Jimmy stuffed the remainder of the burger into his mouth and, grabbing his Coke bottle, followed his dad out the door. Ernie drove slowly around the courthouse. What are you looking for, Dad? Jimmy asked. Without answering, Ernie brought the pickup truck to a stop behind the game warden's truck, which sat in the sun in the hot courthouse parking lot. Jumping out of his idling truck, Ernie grabbed the dead raccoon out of the back of his pickup bed. Ernie also grabbed a Jimmy bar that he kept at his trunk's toolbox. Dropping the raccoon on the ground by the driver's door of the game warden's truck, he quickly and deftly used the Jimmy bar to pop the lock on the truck. Opening the door, Ernie jammed the dead raccoon under the seat of the game warden's truck. Pulling a bandana out of his back pocket, Ernie pushed down the lock on the door, taking care to make sure that his thumb did not slip past the bandana and come in contact with the door. He then wiped off the door handle after closing the truck door. Jumping back into his truck, Ernie got him and Jimmy out of Savannah and heading back to St. Joseph. As they headed south on U.S. 71, Ernie said, Son, I want you to always remember that the government is not of the people, by the people, and for the people. Government is against the people, destroys the people, and hates the people. Jimmy said nothing and looked out the window, watching the farm fields roll by. He was thinking about how the hateful Miss Evans had abused the system to try and control his family. He thought about the game warden and how he had used the system to rob his dad. Jimmy was wondering when justice would prevail and those that harmed others would have to pay for their crimes when the pickup suddenly swerved. Jimmy was thrown against the passenger side door, then into the dash as Ernie brought the truck to an abrupt stop in the middle of the highway. Got him! He yelled. Ernie jumped out of the truck and, running back up the road, picked up the body of a squirrel he had just deliberately ran over. He threw the dead ammo into the bed of his pickup, and as he climbed back behind the wheel of the truck, Ernie said, Son, tonight we will have the best $75 squirrel gravy and biscuits you have ever had in your life. Though Jimmy had never eaten squirrel gravy and biscuits before in his life, later that evening he had to admit that was the best $75 squirrel gravy and biscuits he had ever had in his life. Well, that concludes this episode of the Rubber Biscuit Roadshow. Please join us next week when we say, go ahead and make my day. Until then, this is your friendly neighborhood gypsy saying, may God bless and keep you and yours. Later, Gators. Bye-bye now. Visit the Rubber Biscuit Roadshow online at www.rubberbiscuit.com. That's www.rubberbiscuit.com. The Rubber Biscuit Roadshow is produced by Tatman Productions, LLC. All parts of this program are copyrighted, all rights reserved. No parts may be published, reproduced, or used without the written express permission of Tatman Productions, LLC.